This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Today's show is on alternatives to nursing homes. One of our worst nightmares is having to live the rest of our lives in a nursing home. There are almost 50% more nursing homes than McDonald's in the United States. And while most are fairly well run, the structure and the values of nursing homes typically make them warehouses that strip residents of their dignity, independence, and any semblance of a normal life. They may provide good nursing care, but these are not homes. No wonder so many older Americans say, "Promise me you'll never put me in a nursing home." It doesn't have to be that way. Beth Baker, author of Old Age and a New Age, The Promise of Transformative Nursing Homes, describes dozens of facilities that really are homes. Beth, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you've written articles on a lot of things. You're an award-winning author of a preteen biography. What got you interested in writing about nursing homes?
Well, I have written about aging issues for many years for the Washington Post Health Section and AARP and other publications. And when I learned about this story about a movement to deeply, fundamentally change nursing homes, I was intrigued immediately. Partly, I think, because my own grandmother had died in a nursing home and I had sad memories of that. But I'm the kind of person that's really drawn to stories that are hopeful and where people are really making positive change in the world.
I think we're kindred spirits. I'm always drawn to cutting edge and things that are done well and give that sense of hope. Could you describe for us your favorite nursing home and what it's like?
I have two favorites that are very different from one another, but I'll start with one in Seattle called Providence Mount St. Vincent. It's in a big old building. You wouldn't think of it as cutting edge if you saw it from the outside, but inside there is such a sense of life and vitality. For one, they have daycare centers for 100 children right there inside the nursing home.
Oh, fabulous.
That come 5 days a week, so you see kids all over the place. They have an art studio, and I met people in their 90s who had never painted in their lives who felt such satisfaction and joy discovering that they could do something new.
Let me slow you down. What do the residents do with the children?
They can do as much or as little as they wish. Some really get involved and go to the daycare centers regularly. The kids are kind of attached to one of the neighborhoods, so that they have lunch once a week with a small group of elders, so that the idea is some relationships form between the children and the older people. And I talked to some parents who said it's really like surrogate grandparents in some cases. There are art classes that the kids and the elders can go to together. There's a lot of different opportunities.
What amazes me, too, is that teenagers may blow off grandparents as, oh, you know, they're yucky old people or something. But kids just totally accept, you know, young kids, no matter how much dementia there is or how limited the person is, the unconditional love that they get from the elders, they just soak it up and the kids treat them with great dignity and love.
And I actually encountered teenagers at a number of these homes that were doing their community service through volunteering there at the nursing home, and the teens loved it too. They really enjoyed their relationships with these elders, their humor, hearing stories about the past, doing activities together.
Now, you described how they very nicely weaved in the younger children. In a lot of nursing homes, I see a volunteer program where they don't quite know what to do with the volunteers, and so they stand around and they say, well, push the wheelchairs down to the activity, and then when they're finished with the activity, wheel them back or something. How do they weave in the teenagers to make it comfortable and facilitate the interaction?
Well, a couple ways. As much as possible for all these interactions in these homes, it's focused on fostering relationships between people, real, genuine relationships. So they try to set up smaller groups or one-on-one where people can really get to know one another. One fun thing that I was part of, a group of Catholic school junior high kids came every month to this same neighborhood in the nursing home, and so they'd really gotten to know people. And this activity, they were all decorating Valentine cookies together. And the kids were just being themselves, like teenagers will talk, and the older people got such a kick out of being around them and together doing this fun activity. It just seemed very natural. It was like the opposite of being in a hospital or, like you said, wheeling someone to an activity. Well, you know, that's not much fun. But this was actually fun. Everyone was laughing and enjoying themselves.
Are any of these teenagers from low-income areas or even dysfunctional families where maybe it helps give them a family that they don't really have?
I didn't personally encounter that, but I am quite sure that there are some kids who would fit that description just because of some of the neighborhoods these homes are in. There's also children of workers who sometimes come and volunteer.
Mm-hmm. So we see the art, we see the daycare and the kids and even some teens. What else is different about the facility?
Even though it's an old building, they've remodeled it in a way that is much more like home. They've taken out the nurse's station and replaced it with a small family-sized kitchen. People wake up whenever they wish. They eat food that they choose. If they wish to participate in the life of the household, like dusting or going on errands with staff, that's really encouraged, because one thing these places have realized is that the elders want to keep contributing and giving back. They don't want to feel like they're being warehoused and useless with the future just sort of this blank, dreary, you know, day after day. So they both create a physical environment that feels more like home and a day-to-day life that restores people's autonomy and meaning as much as possible.
I think it's a little like at Christmas when other people are giving you gifts and you didn't give them anything. You feel badly, and so many people in nursing homes are put in that position where everything is done for them and there's so little that opportunity for them
return. That's right, and it's very depressing.
If you were a resident in this facility, could you say, hey, could you put some feta cheese on the shopping list, and here are some of the other foods I really like?
Some of the places I went to, you could do that. Like one of the most cutting edge is called the Greenhouse, and I went to the first one in Tupelo, Mississippi, but there's greenhouses sprouting up all around the country, and they are really modeled on a group home. They have 10 to 12 people who live there, each with their own private room, and the elders will help develop menus for the week. But even in some of the bigger places, they often would have small refrigerators, like college kids might mm-hmm. take to their dorm room, where people could have their own food that they enjoyed. Even few beers in there, mm-hmm. you know, in some of the places I went. The whole idea is to make it as much like your own normal life as you would have if you were still living in your own home, because the whole point is this is your home, and you should have as much freedom as possible.
With the Eden Alternative and the Greenhouse Movement, one of the things they emphasized was lots of plants, lots of pets.
Mm-hmm.
I see nursing homes where they trot in a little dog for, quote, pet therapy, and, you know, you're supposed to pet it and get real excited, and to me it's so patronizing. What kind of effect do you see on the residents of having a real pet that they own there?
Right. Well, I think any kind of, even pet therapy is better than nothing at all, but I really agree with you. To have pets that are part of the home it could be especially meaningful, I learned, for some of the residents who were very withdrawn. People who might have a hard time engaging with people might really light up if they could have a relationship with a dog or a cat or even birds. I saw people involved with their care, and sometimes the pets, of course, would sort of choose a resident that they wanted to hang out with. And of course, what could be make you feel better than to have a cat curled up on your lap? It just makes you smile to walk down a nursing home corridor and see a little dog or cat trotting towards you, not on a leash, but just, you know, they live there. It just brings a smile to your face.
And a number of the residents just don't have very good communication skills, so conversations with them are going to be pretty one-sided and not that mutual enjoyment, whereas the pet, they can communicate fully with the pet and get that unconditional love.
That's exactly right. And what I talk about in the book is the richer the environment, and by that I mean the pets, the plants, the smiles, the hugs, the food you enjoy, the good smells. The more you have that around you, the more, for want of a better word, with it people are. They don't sink so much into, say, their dementia or their depression. In all these homes, there was just a sense of lightness and a look on people's faces that was one of contentment.
And one of the things that you said fascinated me about the birds, I see an awful lot of nursing homes now that have these beautiful glass enclosed structures with birds in them. And for the first 5 minutes, you're fascinated with it, but the residents don't have any role in feeding them or taking care of them. So I don't see many residents paying much attention to them after they've been at the facility a day or two.
That's funny you say that, because my mother is in a nursing home right now, and they have exactly what you're talking about. So I said to her, well, let's go down and look at the birds. So I wheeled her down there, and I don't even think it was 5 minutes. It was like 2 minutes, and she said, okay, you know, I've had enough of the birds. But some of these places I've been, I interviewed one man who had a bird on his shoulder, and another place in Minnesota where they were passing around a cockatiel from hand to hand. And again, it was just a delightful experience. Everyone really enjoyed it.
Do virtually all of these ideal facilities have individual rooms, or do we still have some of the double occupancy?
Some still have double occupancy, but it's definitely a goal that they're shooting for is private rooms. You occasionally meet someone who actually enjoys having a roommate. They feel less lonely. They feel like they enjoy that relationship. But I think most people agree that as adults, we really don't want to be sharing our bedroom with a stranger. We really want our privacy.
One of the big problems in nursing homes that I don't hear it talked about very often is theft. How do they prevent theft, or is it not even an issue just because the morale is so much better there?
I haven't heard that it was an issue at any of these homes, and I have had that raised when I'm speaking. Concern about that, and I think it all goes back to the relationships and the level of trust. The staff at these, they put a lot into staff development, staff empowerment, and really nurturing that sense of trust. So the staff I interviewed, it would be like, you know, would you steal from your great aunt or something? You know, I don't even think it would occur to them.
Like you don't steal from family.
Exactly.
And I gather the staff get treated more like family, that there's less of a distinction between staff and residents.
The staff is very much treated like family, both by the residents and by the managers and administrators, as much as sometimes they can't pay a whole lot more. We all know that nurses' aides are terribly underpaid. But they're treated with respect, they're shown appreciation, and they're constantly honing their skills, which is really what people want. People want to do a good job.
How many of these homes have staff that not only work side by side with the residents in preparing meals, but then sit down and eat the meals with them?
Oh, quite a few do. Quite a few do. Some it's expected of the staff to sit down and share a meal. Sometimes they eat their lunch alongside the person, or if the person needs quite a bit of assistance with eating, then it might be, you know, that the staffer can't actually eat themselves. But the idea is that they would sit around the table together as much as possible. Not all of them, but many of them do that.
So how did we get this change in this revolution, if you will? How about Dr. Bill Thomas? Can you paint a portrait of him?
Dr. Bill Thomas is one of the leaders of this movement. He's described always as a maverick, which he is. He's a Harvard-trained physician who early on worked in a nursing home and realized something was dreadfully wrong. He lives in upstate New York. He looks kind of like a 40-something hippie. He is a deeply inspiring person who first came up with the notion of filling up the nursing home with pets and plants and creating gardens. But that's really just a small piece of what they describe as a culture change in these homes. He really believes in the concept of elderhood, meaning it's a stage of life that is important and should be valued. And he's really beloved and revered in this movement because he's so committed and charismatic.
What does he hope elderhood will do to change the way we view older people?
He thinks that it not only will change how older people are treated in nursing homes so that they're not shoved aside and warehoused, but respected and have a life worth living, but that also changes our own view of our own individual lives. So that aging, in his view, would not be something we fear or dread, but that it's a life stage we can almost look forward to, despite, obviously, the physical or even cognitive problems that may come our way, that our experience will be valued by the rest of society, and that it will be more like we think of in the traditional societies where elders are revered. That's what he'd like to see with a kind of a modern twist.
Yeah, as you were talking about that, I started thinking of countries like Japan, where there's a lot of veneration and appreciation of the patriarchs and matriarchs of the families.
And there's no reason why we can't create that in our culture. And frankly, I think it's, I don't know if you're a baby boomer, I am, but I really think my generation might be the ones.
They're not going to stand for the nursing homes, no.
Well, not only that, but they may make being old cool. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's possible.
Do you know why he used the word elderhood as opposed to just elders?
Because he wanted people to think of it as a stage of life, like childhood, adulthood. So instead of elders being seen as weak, sick adults, or, you know, declining adults, that elderhood would be an actual stage of life that is honored.
Just like childhood.
Yes.
And I wasn't suggesting that older people are like children again. I was just...
No, I understand that. Yeah.
Okay. Do I understand correctly that he started with the Eden alternative, which was the, as we said, the greening and the pets, and then went to greenhouse movement, which is more clusters of cottages?
Yes, and partly it's the same philosophy as the Eden alternative, but he was frustrated that there were some nursing homes that had gone through the Eden training and said they were Eden homes, but they really hadn't done the fundamental change. And actually, I went to a couple where it really was almost like a marketing gimmick, you know, where they had a potted plant and a cat and said, we've changed our culture, and they hadn't. And it was kind of giving giving the Eden movement a bit of a bad name, I think, but he decided to start from the ground up, that to really make the Eden alternative real, to implement it, he became convinced you really had to begin with a whole new building philosophy, different way of training staff. And so that's what the greenhouse is.
So with the greenhouse, if we have these clusters of cottages, are they all, for cold climates like we're in, are the cottages connected, or do you have to go outside to go from one to another?
I believe you have to go outside. And that was some people were... There's actually a greenhouse-type place in Columbus at Westminster Thurber Village, mm-hmm. and they have adapted to be connected to their building. They didn't have the space to build these separate cottages, but they loved everything about that model. So even though it's not called a greenhouse, it's got everything that a greenhouse has. Most of them are individual houses, so for some of the professional staff, like nurses and doctors, they do have to hoof it out in the cold to bring their services to the household. The aides are assigned to a permanent house, so they would just be in the house their whole shift.
What I'm thinking of is, you know, if you're going to have, say, an art class or some kind of group activity, I would think you'd often want to get several of the cottages together, and then you're, you know, going through the snow and cold or whatever.
I think that's one of the challenges that this model has, and that's why, as much as I love the greenhouse, I really also love this one in Seattle I mentioned to you, mm-hmm. because it's all in one building, and it's very easy for the elders to participate in anything they want to do. And it's a trade-off, basically. So it depends. I think part of the idea of this movement is choice. So for some people who maybe aren't as social, the greenhouse and more of a really intimate family setup would really appeal to them. If you're a more gregarious mm-hmm. person who likes a lot of activities, the other might be better.
We're talking with Beth Baker, author of Old Age and a New Age, The Promise of Transformative Nursing Homes. And your website is just www.bethbaker.net. Notice that's .net.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is a combination of research about nursing home alternatives and examples and portraits, if you will, of nursing home alternatives. So a real nice kind of one-stop shopping and learning what the alternatives are. Anything else you want to tell us about the book?
Interestingly, I wrote this really for the general public because I felt most people weren't aware of this really exciting movement in elder care. And while I've been gratified by the response I've gotten from readers, I'm finding it's at least as valued by people working in the field. If they're trying to make these changes, it's very affirming. And if they haven't made them, I think they find it inspiring to read about what's possible.
We'll get back to Dr. Baker in just a moment. Note how old you feel now. You will soon feel a lot younger after hearing Dr. Bricky. That's how I'm usually introduced when I give a keynote address. We are brainwashed with limiting beliefs about aging. As America's preeminent anti-aging psychologist, I bring good news for a change. A change in how you view aging, and I do it with a good helping of humor. In short, I help audiences learn the mental game for living longer, healthier, and happier. But I'm not satisfied with people just acquiring information and having a feel-good time. I have people adopt healthier beliefs on the spot and lock them in for lifelong benefits. I also like to stay and do breakout sessions, consulting, and individual coaching at no additional cost. When your organization or business needs a speaker, have them check out my demo video at anti-aging-speaker.com. That's anti-aging-speaker.com. And give me a call. My phone number is on all my websites. And now back to Beth Baker. I'm amazed at how little information is getting out there about these alternatives. what's going wrong with the media that they're not picking up on the, is the problem that it's good news?
I think that is part of the problem, because we still hear much more grim news about nursing homes, and I don't mean to pretend like there isn't grim news about nursing homes. There's still a lot of sad stories out there that should be reported. But it's never as gripping for the media to latch on to a positive story as a negative one. And also, these homes are still definitely the minority. At best, I'd say 10%, and probably more like 5%, have really transformed themselves the way I write about.
That sounds small, but we're still talking about several hundred nursing homes that have...
Oh, yes. No, probably more than them. Probably close to 1,000, yes. And there's many more that are taking steps. I think what's shifted in the last few years, that instead of these being really kind of outliers, radical, fringe kind of people leading this, it's become accepted within the profession as the goal, as the ethic, that this is how it should be. Now it's getting everybody to really move towards it, but it's no longer even a question about our values of home and community, much more important and grounding for people than the institutional hospital model that we've had.
In terms of what prevents it, the first issue becomes money, in that if these nursing homes aren't making a profit and Medicare isn't going to pay them any extra for being a kinder, gentler, more generative facility, it's often not going to happen. I gather that building costs are certainly an issue, but once you have a facility in this alternative, that the costs are about the same?
Yes, that's one of the surprising things, and I do lay out the business case for this in my book. There's a lot of waste in nursing homes, and one of the biggest is the cost of staff turnover, which is a crisis in long-term care. We waste $4 billion a year just in aides leaving their jobs in nursing homes as a nation. And a real hallmark of these homes I write about is reducing staff turnover. That's a huge financial savings. It's also cheaper to pay for healthy people than it is to pay for treating things like bed sores,
mm-hmm,
and the results of falls and all kinds. Not that there still aren't falls in these nursing homes. I don't mean to make it sound like they're perfect. I mean, they're still frail people with problems. But there are savings in providing good care. Also, there's less food waste when people can eat when they're hungry and eat food they enjoy. There's a lot of savings in this high-quality model that are, with that money then, they can hire more direct care staff and have a better staff-resident ratio, which is so important.
I'm laughing because I see probably half the food on the trays not being eaten, in large part because it's pretty unpalatable food.
It is. As I mentioned, my mother's in a nursing home now. She loves nothing more than when I bring her, like, a tuna sandwich or, you know, anything, just because it tastes like real familiar food.
It's almost like prisoners saying, bring me some cigarettes. They're saying, bring me some decent food.
Well, that is one of the big advantages of the smaller environments instead of the big commercial-type kitchen, is that feeling of food. I mean, by that I mean, you know, home cooking and the smell of food being cooked and fresh and hot versus, you know, being brought up in these big rumbly carts from the bowels of the building.
And you mentioned staff turnover. You cited a statistic in your book that the turnover of aides is about 70% a year.
Yes, the new statistics just came out, and it's down a little bit to 66%, but yes, nationally, and in some states, it's still as high as 100%.
Wow.
I know, it's startling. And these homes, they get it down to single digit often, and then they tell me the reason there's turnover is that people are asked to leave because they're not working to the standards that people want. Whereas traditionally, mm-hmm. it's the aides are quitting because they're so frustrated and unhappy.
I would think that one of the big savings that probably doesn't get measured is the reduced medications.
Yes. And there's some really exciting things happening with the treatment of people who have dementia, which are about half of nursing home residents. And there's been many studies showing that they're overly medicated with antipsychotic drugs. They're finding that with this person-centered care and these rich environments I was speaking of, you can greatly, greatly reduce the amount of medication the people are on and save huge amounts of money, because the medications not only cost something, but they have all these side effects that then you put them on more medication to treat the side mm-hmm. effects, as I'm sure you're aware. There's a doctor in New York, Dr. Al Power, who's now working with Eden Alternative, who's really an expert in this, and he's going around the world speaking on how he's taken almost all their residents off these antipsychotic medications to great benefit.
And even, I'm amazed at how many residents are on sleeping pills.
Oh, I know, and it's all for the convenience of the staff. It's not good.
You mentioned person-centered. Did that come out of the Plantree model?
The Plantree model, which is a wonderful model for the acute care hospitals, which they called it patient-centered, they now have a model in long-term care that they're calling relationship-centered. But this movement, one reason I think they've had a hard time is their marketing. There's a bunch of different labels: person-centered, resident-centered, resident-directed, Eden Alternative. They all basically mean the same thing, but a lot of visionary people around the country came up with the same philosophy and ideas independent of one another, and mm-hmm. they all came up with their same, with different labels. One thing I wanted to mention is they have all banded together under something called the Pioneer Network to promote this culture change in long-term care and really a culture change in how we view aging.
And you can go to pioneernetwork.net. Again, that's .net, pioneernetwork.net. And I guess that serves two purposes. One, professionals who want to help transform their facilities, but mm-hmm. also lay people who just want to learn more about what's going on and help advocate for it. What role can the layman play via the Pioneer Network?
If they are a family member, of course, they can learn more about how to promote this kind of change where their loved one is. I also wish the public would get a lot more involved as volunteers, because this whole relationship piece is so key to people's well-being. There's also now statewide coalitions being formed to foster this kind of change, and that's another way the public could plug in. I wish that legislators would go visit some of these homes so they realize what's possible. I mean, our tax dollars are paying for a huge portion of nursing home care through Medicaid and Medicare, and we should be really demanding this type of change if we're going to be paying for it. So there's a lot that the public could do. And actually, if I could mention again my website, I have links to the Eden Alternative, the Pioneer Network, and I also have a list of questions that if you're looking for a nursing home, you might want to print out and take with you, because I get more at these quality of life issues that we've been talking about.
Is that BethBaker.net or is that...
Yes, BethBaker.net, and you can click on Old Age and a New Age, and it will take you to all these other resources I have.
I'm glad you said that, because I didn't find that.
Oh, sorry.
I also want to mention that one of the really stupid things that happens is that the government, through Medicaid, is willing to pay about $5,000 a month to keep somebody in a nursing home, and oftentimes they're capable of assisted living that cost about $3,000 a month, and you get a private room and a much more dignified, functional atmosphere, and yet that's usually just out of pocket. And only in the last few years have some of the states wised up and said, well, if you've been in a nursing home, we'll do a waiver where you can go into assisted living instead, and we'll pay for that. Mm-hmm. But then they often set the rates so low that the assisted living facilities don't want to accept them.
Right. I know. It's something that consumers have been pushing for, both home health aides or assisted living, that they could have whatever money that they're putting into nursing home care, that money would, you know, stay with the person in whatever setting they chose. You know, it just all comes down to not wanting to open up the floodgates to even more people getting support from the government. Really, and I don't get into this a lot in my book, we as a society need to decide how are we going to pay for long-term care for the rapidly aging population. We all have our head in the sand, and it's a huge issue. You know, maybe we should all have to get long-term care insurance like we get car insurance, or maybe we have to have a national system. You know, there's a lot of different paths to take, but we need to start working on it.
Well, I hesitate to just turn it over to the government. I think we're going to get a lot more creativity out of the private sector, and certainly, inevitably, one way or another, a lot of funds are going to come from the federal government. In the case of nursing home versus assisted living, this is just money waiting to be claimed in terms of savings, that all they would have to do is pay the going rate for assisted living facilities instead of what they're paying for the nursing homes, and they would save many thousands of dollars a year per resident for the people already in nursing homes.
Well, for the people already in nursing homes, that's true, but it would increase the numbers of people eligible if you do what you're saying. If you made everybody who's now in assisted living eligible, you're going to increase the numbers by like 50% or something.
Why should I be paying out of pocket when the government's paying for my neighbor's care?
So I think that's what they're afraid of.
Good point.
It's a problem. But I do think the next generation, we're going to see big, big changes in how we deliver this kind of care and how we live as we grow old. And I think there are going to be changes for the better. I really do.
So the Pioneer Network, what are they focusing on to try to achieve the change?
They focus more on the provider end and on the government end. So the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, who oversees the federal regulations of nursing homes, they're completely on board with this culture change, in large part because of the work of the Pioneer Network. So the federal government is trying to make sure that there's no regulations that are obstacles to promoting these new kind of homes. The nursing home trade associations will say, oh, well, we could do all that, but the regulations won't let us. In fact, that's pretty much not true, except for there are some state regulations that still need to be changed, but the Pioneer Network's really working closely with the government and with providers. There's now manuals that have been created. There's all kinds of tools out there that the Pioneer Network has for nursing homes who want to do this kind of change.
I'm interested in kind of the history of the movement, and I'm curious what a few other players might have, what effect they might have had. Did Betty Friedan and the feminist movement have much of an effect on humanizing nursing homes?
I don't think they did. I mean, her book, Fountain of Age, was certainly influential. It really came from the nursing home reform movement from the 60s that was really focused on stopping the most horrific abuse and neglect stories. So they really were tackling the bad stuff that's going on that was really a lot worse back then. They convened the first gathering that became the Pioneer Network. They started to notice that around the country there were this handful of people that were really making these changes.
Did the Grey Panthers have much of an influence?
Mm-hmm. The Grey Panthers did. Again, though, they were more... The roots of this movement were in reformers tackling the bad stuff, the really atrocious stories. What's new about this movement is that they turned it on its head and said, okay, we know how awful it is. How can we make it better? What does a good home look like? How can we imagine a good life for a nursing home resident?
One of the things that amazed me, unless I missed something, was we had the big normalization movement in the 60s and 70s and deinstitutionalization, where we got so many of the people with mental retardation mm-hmm. and mental illnesses out of the institutions, into the communities, into group homes. But that didn't seem to carry over with nursing homes.
No, but I think that this movement is looking to that example for ideas and how they can learn from that experience. And I don't think we can underestimate the influence of the owners of nursing homes in wanting to keep things as they are. They're very good at influencing legislators to keep things as they are. And 2/3 of our nursing homes or 3/4 are owned by for-profit companies, and more not your local mom and pop, but large corporations that own hundreds of nursing homes.
You know, one of the vested interests is the physicians go to your doctor, and often you're frustrated that you only get a 5 or 10 minute visit. In nursing homes, people rarely see their physician, even though they're often have very complicated illnesses and dozens of medications, and yet they may see their physician an average of 2 minutes a month or something. Do you see anything changing in that arena?
The homes that I went to that I really liked, I did see that the doctors seemed to have more of a presence there. I know I did interview several geriatricians who were on board with this movement. But the truth is that nurses are where it's at in nursing homes. Nurses really are the ones that are in charge and, for better or worse, control the quality of care. The physicians really are, as you say, they come in and oversee things, do brief rounds, but they don't really, I don't think most nursing home residents really have much of a relationship with the doctor there, the medical director.
Oh, what typically happens is the nurse just calls in and says, will you change this medication? And he says, okay, or she mm-hmm. says, okay, and that's the extent of the care.
Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure if this culture change and quality of life that I'm talking about I don't think it depends on the physicians being more involved for that to happen, only to the extent that doctors need to not over-prescribe, do no harm.
You know, part of the puzzle is creating a little more incentive. I assume that if doctors really spent the time, they wouldn't make a very good income from it. However, I see facilities like the Erickson retirement communities where he has a doctor on staff that spends often half an hour with a resident, and the first time that meets with him spends an hour and a half with him, and really integrates all that's going on. They figured out how to make that financially worthwhile. It seems like there must be a way to do it in nursing homes as well.
Yeah, I'd be curious. I know I really admire the Erickson homes for their wellness component. I think it is extraordinary. And they do have these on-site doctors. I don't know, and it would be a good question, how much those docs are spending with the nursing home people on the campus, mm-hmm. as a, you know, versus the independent people who are living there. That would be interesting to find out.
Well, another thing that could be enormously helpful is Erickson communities have really pushed electronic records, and I know Obama said he wants to get medical records electronic within 5 years, which is an mm-hmm. amazing timeline.
Mm-hmm.
That would help enormously.
Yes. Yep.
We're talking with Beth Baker, author of Old Age and a New Age, The Promise of Transformative Nursing Homes. Beth Baker is an award-winning freelance writer, a documentary film producer, also author of a preteen biography. But obviously our focus today is on her wonderful book, Old Age and a New Age. The website is bethbaker.net. Notice that's .net. And she also referred to pioneernetwork.net. And remember the trick that we discovered, that if you click on the book on her website, it leads you to a lot of resources as well. Beth, any other closing thoughts?
No, just that I hope that your listeners will really learn about this movement and feel a lot more hopeful about what's possible as we age.
Thank you so much for a wonderful book and for sharing your experience. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Commentary. What can we say about the interview with Beth Baker? Getting nursing homes to become homes, to change from a bureaucratic model to a person-centered model, can seem like a Herculean task, but it is an idea whose time has come. In the 1970s, there were 413,000 Americans in mental health and mental retardation institutions. The deinstitutionalization movement in the 70s and 80s closed most of the institutions and moved the services to the local communities. Despite a growing U.S. population, by 2000, there are only about 64,000 residents in mental health and mental retardation inpatient facilities. That's only about a sixth of the previous census. What brought about the change? It started with a normalization ideology, a value system that championed having people with mental illnesses and intellectual disabilities live as normal life as possible. It was aided with legislation like the Community Mental Health Act of 1963 and court cases going all the way to the Supreme Court, and with the public's disgust with the snake pit institutions like the one depicted in the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Jack Nicholson. The reason I'm talking about the deinstitutionalization movement is that it shows that medical institutions can be radically changed. I'm amazed that the nursing homes weren't swept up in the normalization movement of the 70s and 80s. Today, there are several factors that suggest their time has come. First, there's the ideological thrust from Dr. Bill Thomas and other person-centered advocates. Then we have hundreds of facilities demonstrating that these models work and aren't more expensive than the current medical model. Then we have greater scrutiny of wasteful spending of money, such as the over-medicating of patients. And we have baby boomers' unwillingness to accept that kind of treatment, or for that matter, even to grow old. And we have a growing awareness of, from the general public, of what nursing homes are like and how they dehumanize people. And finally, Beth Baker said the CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Healthcare Services, are supporting the movement. Assisted living facilities have rescued almost a million people from having to live in a nursing home. Many more would live in assisted living facilities instead of a nursing home if we can figure out how to fund it. Hospice drastically changed how people are viewed and treated in their final months of life. The changes Beth Baker talked about are critically needed and appear to be undeniable. Even yesterday isn't soon enough. And I greatly appreciate Beth Baker's efforts and the wonderful book that she wrote. A reminder, for information on anti-aging psychology, my books, my hypnosis CDs, or to subscribe to my free Defy Aging newsletter, go to my portal site, notaging.com, notaging.com, and it will link you to all my information and services. Podcaster on webtalkradio.net and also archived on agelesslifestyles.com. Emails. I love getting those emails. Send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. That's radio@agelesslifestyles.com. Last week's show on Life Lessons from Literature drew many favorable responses and some complaints that there's a lot of literature besides novels that portray positive role models for aging well. These include biographies, especially historical biographies of Elizabethan queens, and some romance novels, especially historical romance novels. Even Yoda got honorable mention. I also note that prior to the 20th century, what passed for old was much younger, and most people didn't live into their 70s, 80s, and older. What do you think of the alternatives to nursing homes that Beth Baker talked about? I'd love to hear your comments. Again, send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. This is your anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, on webtalkradio.net and agelesslifestyles.com, thanking you for joining us on our journey to live longer, healthier, and happier.